What number is this, Chip?
Zilch, 191, Mickey Dolan's Timeless.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
Look, it's time for Zilch now, baby. Gonna have a ball.
Welcome back to Zilch, your podcast full of monkeys. I'm Ken Mills, one of your hosts here today. And this is a bit of a surprise episode of Zilch. Surprise, surprise, here we are. To quote David Lee Roth, I heard you missed us and we are back. That's right. This is a special episode of Zilch in honor of Mickey Dolan's brand new EP, which is coming out September 4th, Mickey Dolan's Timeless. And the digital single Terry is out right now. We have some guests in the studio today. We have here around this table, we've got Mickey Dolan's. Say hi, Mickey.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, and then we've followed up with John Hughes.
Hello. Long time.
And we've got Pete Donnelly of the Figs right down there. Yes, sir. Hi. And Sam Hollander.
The headliner. Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
Hey. Headliner.
And all these gentlemen are here to talk about something that they've been working very, very hard on. And it's a brand new Mickey Dolan's album. Who would like to lead in telling us what this is all about and how it came to be? Mickey, do you want to do that or John?
No, John should start because it started with you.
Mickey and I started working together last year and we were hanging out and thought, you know what? It's time for something new because, you know, we love the Monkees. We love Mickey's actually on a tour celebrating the Monkees' 60th. It is the 60th. We need to have something new out there as well as all the reissues. And so we thought we had such a good time with Good Times. So why not have a better time?
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey, then John came to me and we talked about it. And then I said, well, who's going to produce? And he said, how about Sam Hollander? And I was like, what? You gotta be freaking. And I just thought it was a wonderful idea. And then Pete Donnelly got on board. And then, as usual, John and everybody, and myself to some degree, just found the most amazing songs from the most amazing songwriters. Again, Ken, you know the history of me and the Monkees, the stable of incredible songwriters that that we've always had. And we still do to this day, all the way through Good Times. I mean, besides the original Monkey stuff, all the stuff from Good Times. And here we are again. And we have, again, some of the greatest writers, Paul Westerberg, Andy Partridge, Sam Hollander, and the late, great Adam Schlesinger, Vicki Peterson, Shelby Lynn, and Pete Donnelly. Thank you, Pete. And John Polanski, which is the craziest song I think you'll ever hear.
Tell people the name of the Johnny Polanski song.
Sure. In the center of my heart, there's a force commonly known as love.
Sure.
There's a force commonly known as love.
It's a great song, but we will get there. First off, we're going to talk a little bit about this album and that it's got a really cool cover. And there's some wonderful photographer that took that photo. Mickey, do you want to tell us who that was?
Yes. One of the greatest photographers in the world. as a matter of fact, her name is Emily. Her last name is Dolan's. She's my daughter. And she's actually a pretty pro photographer. She's been studying it for years. It's more than a hobby. She actually, like I said, she's a pro photographer. And she would come around to shows and stuff and shoot shots and always came up with something great. And it's funny because since she was a child, I mean 6-8 years old, living in England with little Instamatics, the little tiny snap things. she always had this incredible eye for composition, always just as a child. And she carried on with it, and it was a hobby, and then it was a bit of a business, and then a hobby, then a business. And she came up with this shot and some others of me, and just phenomenal.
Fantastic. And Zilch listeners will, of course, remember probably purchasing some of her prints featuring you. And she's fantastic. We love her. She's been on the show. She's a great person. Can't say enough good about her. This album really is a spiritual brother or successor to Good Times in many, many ways. It's almost like the Blues Brothers movie where they're getting the band back together, right? We've got Mickey, you've got you, John Hughes, we've even got Adam Schlesinger returning, and we've got these amazing songwriters. And this album, similar to Good Times, features acts that were influenced by Mickey and the Monkees over the years. We've got Andy Partridge from XTC, and he's a returning combatant, if you will, because he was with the
Three.
Good Times. Yeah, he's done three songs that you've recorded, and it's just been amazing. Vicki Peterson, we're going to get to each one of those. But I think we need to kick this off with a little sample of what you're going to hear. And this, again, is coming out on Friday Music. Do we know what day this is being released, John?
Today, Friday, June
Today.
26th.
Oh, wow. So lucky you, listeners, you're out there hearing this right now. We've got some old radio people here. I'm an old radio guy. John, you're an old radio guy.
Old.
We've got the, yeah.
I'm an old guy who likes radio, so.
Well, there you go. And we actually have a face for radio, unlike Mickey. And Mickey was a disc jockey and did very well at it. So, Mickey, we want to talk up the new song, Terry. So, without further ado or further ado, take it away, Mickey.
Absolutely, Ken. Here we go. Mickey Dolenz in the morning. Mickey the D. Here's Mickey's new single, Terry.
Contemplating. Word on the street is you come as a shark. So they say that you're engaged. Silently, I'm enraged. Every night I'm coming unglued. Can't help myself for thinking of you.
That is Terry off Mickey Dolenz's new album, Timeless. That digital single is out right now. And the full EP, Mickey Dolenz Timeless, will be out on September 4th. Vinyl, CD, digital. So great to hear new music from Mickey Dolenz right here on Zilch. Can't get much better than that. Wow, what a great song. It's got all that wonderful jangly goodness. And I love jangly music. I'm a sucker for anything with a Rickenbacker on it, you know. And Mickey, it just blows my mind about this song. I swear your voice sounds exactly on this track like it did on Pull It. And some people love Pull It. Some people aren't as wise as I am. But Pull It came out in 1987. How in the hell do you keep your voice so in shape?
Well, there's a voice in the attic getting older.
This
I
Dorian Gray.
well, it's a bit of a long story, but I've been asked that question a lot. I would say a lot of it to do with genetics. My mother and father were both singers, and your muscles, your vocal cords are muscles, and so some people are born and with a golfer's physique or a tennis player's physique or a wrestler. So there's a certain physicality that comes, I think, with inheritance, because it's their muscles like anything else in your body. And the rest of it is training and practice and taking care, being careful, not singing on bad pipes. I've canceled shows rather than sing when I could have damaged my pipes. So it's a combination basically of and training. I warm up every night before every show, doing vocal exercises, because you wouldn't go out onto the center court at Wimbledon in the finals without having warmed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to stretch, right?
Yes, exactly.
Well, it definitely works whatever you're doing. Keep it up. Now, this song was written by the great Paul Westerberg of The Replacements, and who doesn't love The Replacements? It is fantastic. John, what are your thoughts on this track, and how did it come to be?
This was actually submitted for Good Times back in 2015. And, God bless him, Adam didn't like it. So it didn't make the cut. I've always liked the song. And so I know Paul had retired a few years ago and he wasn't doing anything, but I thought, you know what? I'm gonna do a long shot here. So I emailed his manager, Darren, who's awesome. And not more than 24 hours later, we got the full blessing and the excitement from Paul, so can't beat that.
And there is a video that is out, and you can see it today on YouTube right now. We'll put links in the show notes. And it's great to see the band, Mickey. It is great to see John Billings and Rich Dart and Wayne and Coco and Amin and Alex, everybody. It's one of the things that we wanted as fans on Good Times, but I understand that sometimes you don't always get what you want. But it was great that the band is involved on this record because they're a great band, Mickey. You're
Thank
just
you.
you're one of your smartest moves was keeping those people, and they're great ambassadors of you and the Monkees. You cannot have picked a better set of people. God bless them. Love you guys. So how much are they on the album? I'm curious.
In varying degrees, maybe Sam or Pete, you could speak to that.
Pete, can we hear you?
No, can't hear Pete. Sam,
Pete,
are
what
you
happened?
there?
Don't go into the light. I am here.
How about now?
There you
There we
go.
Okay, we can
go.
hear you.
All right, I got this, Sam.
Go.
I mean, the musicians I think are heavily involved with every song, really. We put together a band. Sam came to me and said, we need like a really, a good spirit with a band feel. Can I put together some musicians? But we really have to be sensitive about leaving room for the band to add a lot of details. We put together a trio to sort of track, and then we farmed out all the songs to Mickey's band, and they came back with just incredible stuff. Like you said, the chimey guitars and keyboards, background vocals, essential stuff.
Talk a bit about the core band.
I was going to say one thing though. The Rich Dart guy is a bully.
Yeah,
He made it very uncomfortable in the studio. He,
I've never met anybody so mean, right?
yeah, just I don't know. Can we do like an investigative like report into Rich Dart?
We love Rich Dart here.
So much.
Rich is possibly the sweetest guy I've ever met. The band, Pete, go, and then I'll just chime in.
Sure. I've been doing some sessions with these guys, Doug Yowell on drums. He plays with Joe Jackson, and Ben Butler, who's an extraordinary guitarist, who's played with tons of people, including Sting. But most importantly, I knew there was like a cohesion with these guys because I've done a bunch of records with them, and I knew I could rely on them to show up and nail this stuff. A good band, it's like it has to be, it's not necessarily the best musicians, just has to be the coolest guys that can hang with the music. But with these guys, they happen to be the best musicians too, so it's ultimately cool.
Well, you don't play with Sting and not be top of your game. It just doesn't
Exactly.
happen.
These were real cats, but one thing, Pete and I are both New York guys. So I thought it would be sort of inherently interesting to just sort of keep the foundation of it, track it locally, and keep it in our backyard here and give a different take. Because, Mickey had done a lot of stuff in California and Nashville, et cetera. But I don't know, he never made a record in Paterson, New York. So we started there. And we began tracking there, and it was great because beyond the core, the Rich Dart came in and did all the percussion. John did background vocals. Alex did all the keys and vocal arrangements.
Amin's Rickenbacker.
Amim is a superstar, and Amim's feel is just ridiculous. And he was
Coco.
Coco
The
with all the
lovely
background
Coco.
as
Sister
well.
Coco, yeah.
It was great because it was really I felt like we got the chance to marry these two worlds, like a really like New York cats against like sort of the band. And it was amazing.
Yeah,
I have to say, the
definitely East
recordings were
meets
great.
West.
And then we flew down to Nashville and cut Mickey's vocals down there to just give it a completely different feeling. And I don't want to blow up Mickey's spot, but he is truly as incredible as you would think times 10. What he can do in the studio is unbelievable. He is
so dexterous
vocally. The dexterity is ridiculous. He is so ability to pivot on the spot. And, you know, a lot of singers sort of do a specific thing and then, you know, every take is sort of a slight variation, but they can't get beyond that. And Mickey is so versatile that he can do anything into a song. He can take it to so many different places. And his tone is so absolutely stunning that, you know, it was a masterclass, man. I mean, I think me, Pete and John collectively, we would just sit and just in the live room, just marveling what we were seeing. It was
absolute joy.
We had to pitch things up again. Yeah. Like we did on Good Times with Adam, where we thought, oh, you know, we better keep this in a lower key. No, he's still singing the same key, singing 66.
Mm-hmm.
Again, amazing, amazing, amazing. And one of the things I can say about this is it's got a great vibe and more cowbell. So there was a lot of cowbell on this track.
Rich Stark. That's where it starts.
Yeah. I mean, if we would have got any more celebrities in it, we could have got Will Ferrell to do that part. But, you know, but again, you sound great on this. It's this fantastic song. Very cool vibe. Very cool video. And that's only track one, folks. Up next, we've got track two, Any Way You Want Me. This one is written by Andy Partridge of XTC. He wrote, You Bring the Summer and Love is What I Want. Speaking of Good Times and the Good Times Deluxe Edition, which are out now. And I think Rhino would like us to mention that. Of course, you know that if you're listening to this show.
Throw them both in your cart.
Yes, throw them in your cart. Absolutely, absolutely. This has a bounce that's just infectious, and it almost reminds me of a Harry Nilsson kind of vibe. I actually almost expected you to say, take it away, Harry, at one point. But,
but pick it, Wilson.
Yes, exactly.
That's another reference. Sorry.
So, Mickey, what'd you think about this song?
I love it. I love Andy Partridge. And, well, I love all the songs. I mean, it's hard because when we were retaining them, it was like, well, which ones? Because there was a couple of others. And for me, it's always, I'm the last person to ask, really, which is going to be the single, which is going to be the hit. Which I have no friggin' clue, you know, I'm just a singer. And I remember telling Sam, as I've told all my producers over the last couple of decades, in fact, always, is that, you know, I don't produce, I write a little bit, not a lot. I don't get involved necessarily in arrangements and instrumentation and stuff. I throw in my 2 cents here and there once in a while. But a long time ago, I realized I'm the singer. And I told Sam and Pete, hey, you're Quincy Jones, I'm Frank Sinatra. I wish.
There you go.
And I'm going to come in and sing. That is what I do. And I love taking direction. And I will come up with some ideas and some thoughts and some, you know, bits and pieces here and there. But for the most part, once I kind of approve a song, I guess, and we agree on keys, of course, and we agree on, you know, just the fundamentals of it. And then, well, you know, there's an old saying in England, when I worked in England, producing and directing television and films and stuff, and I would have 20, 30 people in the company. There's a saying in England, you don't keep a dog and bark yourself. Mm. And it's a slang way of saying don't micromanage. And I don't in any of my businesses. I don't micromanage. When I decide that, let's say Sam and Pete are going to produce and John, that's it. They're the producers. And I go fishing until I have to be in the studio, you know, because I don't have the time or energy. I got to keep telling myself these days, I'm not 80 anymore.
you have to tell Sam, you and Mickey have to tell the story about how Sam got you one day on the phone with the comments about the mixes.
Oh yeah, God, what was that? You really did. You got me. I don't believe.
Sam, go ahead. You called Mickey one day, and you and Mickey were just talking, catching up on the record, and you said, you know, hey, I'm working on it, and You know, we got go ahead.
Overdubs and
You tell
stuff
the
and
story.
It's just on the effect of, you know, it's going great. I mean, we still have an ad sorted. You know, we're going to go a little more disco with the material, a little more pop, a little more straight ahead Z100. You know, we haven't done the auto tune yet. So once we really tune you up, it'll feel a little bit more like an early Akon record. It's going to be great. And we're just going to make sure that like we really dial in the synthetic part of this to really get it right.
The club mixes for Grammy's remixer.
Yeah.
The son of a
Wow.
bitch got me.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the three producers. We've got John Hughes, Pete Donnelly, and Sam Hollander here. How do you guys figure out who does what? What's the
Well,
distribution
I
of
can answer
work?
that, Ken. I'd like to answer that. Truthfully, one of the great things about production that you learn when you ascertain the level that, you know, we've gotten to is you try to deflect and do as little work as you can. Honestly, the division was amazing because we're all really good friends. So it couldn't have, is the ultimate labor of love. You have to understand, you know, John Hughes is a Monkees expert to levels that are absolutely freakishly sort of, I call it Pinfieldian. It's like a Matt Pinfield reference, but John's knowledge of Monkees, it was incredible. Pete is a power pop god. And I really am sort of a conceptualist who, you know, really wants to. I just see the entire movie in front of me and sort of just try to dial it in using all the parts that I can sort of summon. So between the three roles, it was actually fantastic because we all were able to sort of do our thing. We never stepped on each other at any point. And, you know, and Mickey's selling himself a little bit short because, you know, he was a taskmaster and he really was the Quincy Jones in the room. And, you know, his orchestrations were incredible. I felt like, you know,
He gave us tons of direction. I mean, as far as the style and the feels and keys, I mean, all that's essential. We wouldn't have known what to do otherwise, you know.
yeah, honestly.
That sounds like great teamwork. Up next is an amazing track, track three, Something Happened, written by Sam Hollander, Adam Schlesinger, and Stephen Gold. Sam, what can you tell us about this one?
Well, Ken, so Adam Schlesinger, we had a love-hate relationship. The love was that he was one of my best friends for many, many years. The hate was that he got to work with Mickey Dolenz and I didn't. So this became a big issue in our friendship. And you know, when he was making Good Times, you know, we were both in North Hollywood working on different records, and we would get together at night, and he would tell me stories about how cool the group was, but specifically Mickey. And I was jealous and I wanted to put a taco right through his mouth. But, you know, we got past it in our friendship. But the genesis of that song, Something Happened, was actually written for it began the original incarnation. It was written for a Muppet movie. And me and Adam and Stephen Gold got together in the city, and we were working on this song. And it's a long story, but we wrote this song, this opus, and we had been hired to do it by the director of a Muppet movie, and it was this amazing thing. And we thought it was a lock. It was very funny because at that time the director had previously done Flight of the Conchords, and we got on a call with him, and we said, you know, we find it strange that this Muppet movie, that all the songs are you know, you're going to outside writers when you have the Flight of the Conchords guys in your back pocket. He's like, no, I'm moving on from that. New world, man. I'm using new people. Well, the movie came out, and the Flight of Conchords guy won the Oscar for that Muppet song. So,
Wow. Wow, wow.
So this song sort of sat. And what was funny is that Adam and I would talk about it all the time because we thought the genesis of it was great, and there was something there, and we were really, really digging on it. But we just couldn't figure out what the right fit was. And then, you know, tragically, Adam passed. When that happened, when John called me about this record, obviously, this meant everything to me because this record is connecting my youth, my fandom, and also my love of a friend who I lost. And I think our
Yes.
so I really wanted to, you know, just I and I kept saying to John, I said to John, it would mean the world to me if you would just take a look at this song in terms of it. And John loved it, and Mickey was open, but I think Mickey said, you know, lyrically, there are just some things that need to be readdressed. He was completely on top of it. He's like, they're just things that I, and by the way, these weren't lyrics about Kermit, but lyrics that I think really needed to connect more to him on a deeper sort of level. And I went back in and dug back into it. And it was really emotional, to be honest with you, because it's unearthing so many memories. But I was really happy where we got it. I just was so excited that he cut it. And when we were in the studio, like I kept sort of misting up a little bit because it just brought back so much and such a heavy experience in my life with Adam.
I think we all agreed the EP is dedicated to Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
He was the greatest, but I still kind of hate him.
And as far as this song, I'm telling you, Monkees fans, you're going to love this one. Mickey, this song got me in my feels, and I'm sure that this one will be so special to fans because of you and the Monkees, Mickey. It really sums up the experience that we all shared while you were making it. We were watching it and listening to it and seeing the tours. All those who watched the shows, bought the albums, been with you every step of the way, this is a song about you, us, and them. And that's how it feels as a Monkees fan. I said to John, this is an amazing track, and it really did touch me, and I think it's going to touch everybody that loves you and the Monkees and good music. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Finn.
You're welcome, Mickey. And we're going to listen to a sample of the track Something Happened from Mickey Dolenz's Timeless. It's available on September 4th.
We were pals, we were friends. We thought that it would never end, 'cause something happened. Something happened. We were stars, shining bright. The world was watching every night. Funny thing happened. Something happened. Life was a show from so long ago. Voices come and go in the dark. We cause such a stir. It's all such a blur. Still I can feel the feeling in my heart. As the years rolled along, we all share the same old songs. Maybe they'll always live on. Something just happened.
Something Happened from Mickey Dolenz's Timeless. What an excellent song. Thank you so much, Mickey. It's wonderful. Our next track, Waiting for the Day, written by the Vicki Peterson of the Bangles, one of the few bands I had a crush on, every member, you know, it's a thing. This is such a great song. How did it get to Mickey, John?
That is what we need Sam for, because that's a Sam relation.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, how did Vicki Peterson come to get involved, other than the fact she's a jangle person like us?
It's a great question. You know, I'm super tight with Vicki Peterson and John Cowsill. They're really good friends. They do have history of performing on Mickey's stuff previously. So they mm-hmm. have their own relationship from Calabasas or Agora or wherever out there, but they had their own dynamic. But it was funny. John really spearheaded this whole thing and deserves a ton of credit, because I feel like he really drove the bus. And when he said all hands on deck trying to find material, it was funny because I just reached out to them randomly, just thinking, you know, I have no idea what they would have in the hopper, but it just might be something they really connected to. And they sent the song over. And we were stunned, you know, because like you said, it does feel like it's a continuation. But it was just, I don't know, it was really cool and really sophisticated and really trippy. And if you know either of them, they're maybe the two loveliest people on earth, but they're just so creative and interesting. And just so it was amazing. But I had no idea if it would land with Mickey. You know, I had no idea if this was something that would resonate. And he flipped on it, you know. It was great.
Yeah.
Seeing Mickey talk about singing with Coco on track for the first time for Waiting for Day.
Yeah. Well, I've sang with her before. in fact, she sang on some of the early Monkees stuff doing backgrounds, and of course Midnight Train, if anybody remembers that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Shorty Blackwell.
Coco and I have sung together since, well, before we could talk, probably. Our mom was a singer and taught us harmonies. And I'm not kidding, almost before we could talk. And we've just sang together all our lives. And we have that, we've been said to have that, what do they call that thing? That sibling something?
Family harmonies.
like the Everly Brothers, the Symbiosis, or
something like that.
That was the word I was going for.
Mike Nesmith and I also, Mike Nesmith and I also had that.
Yes.
And I used to call us the Everly Monkeys. But Coco and I have always had it, and she sings in every show I do, and she has sung basically on everything I've recorded. And this time we do a wonderful duet, Waiting for Day. And Waiting for Day is the Vicki Peterson.
Such an excellent song. To me, I hope this one I get to see live, because with you and Coco doing it, it's just fantastic. This song really stands up. I love the psychedelic groove and the vibe. The song, it kind of dances in the same dance floor as Birth of an Accidental Hipster. And for monkey DJs out there, they could probably actually do a cool remix of those two songs. But it is fantastic. It's got the flange and the phasing and those psychedelic sword, psycho jello. But it's got that vibe, and it's fantastic. I can't wait to see. Hopefully you guys do something with that.
It's the next single. Wait till you see the cover art.
I can't wait.
And the video.
I cannot wait. Up next is track 5, Where Do the Tears Come From?
So I'm going to put it out there. One of his best vocal performances in decades on Where Do the Tears Come From?
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's a hell of a song. I wish I wrote it.
Absolutely.
Who wrote that song, Pete?
Yeah, that's a Shelby Lynn and Pete Donnelly song. It was our attempt at sort of an American classic, I guess you could say.
It's very Burt Bacharachian, if you will.
Absolutely.
Mickey Warren.
I actually mentioned to John, I believe that Dionne Warwick would probably arm wrestle Mickey to sing this song.
Oh, absolutely. That's great.
Again, another one of my favorites. The thing is that each song is distinct, but yet there's a glue that holds it all together. And I think, well, obviously me and my vocals, but also, you know, Sam and Pete and John, you know, like we did on Good Times and with Adam at that time, captured that zeitgeist. I love that word, of the 60s. And like you said, Ken, that jangly guitar thing, it's never really gone away completely. And to my mind, it's come back a lot. And I mean, for like decades. I remember when we did Good Times and people were talking about Adam Schlesinger. And of course, I knew who he was, Fountains of Wayne and blah, blah, blah. And I bumped into Tom Hanks and his wife at a party, and Rita. And I'd never met him. I said, oh my God, I'm a huge fan. He says, well, I'm a fan. In fact, I made a movie about you, you know, that movie that he made, that thing you do. And of course, the theme of the movie is the Fountains of Wayne song. And I remember thinking even at that time, and then when we did Good Times, it was like this sound, for what it's worth, no pun intended, has never gone away. But you could also say that about other eras. You could say that about good old rock and roll from the 50s, or you could even say it about standards. You know, blues standard.
Or about good songwriting, because it's on this album too.
The song has to be there, the actual song. And I guess one of the things that you can say about a great song written by a great songwriter, it's really hard to fuck it up. You can try, but, you know, Carole King does not write a lot of duff tunes. And that's how they can be covered. So often and so well, is that the initial fundamental song is just great. And I got to hand it to Sam and Pete and John picking these incredible tunes. And I talk about songwriters all the time in my show because I owe them so much. I'm so blessed to have had those songwriters. As we all know, Neil Diamond, Carole King, and Jerry Goffin, Voice and Heart, Neil Sedaka,
Sears and Roebuck.
I mean, it just goes on and on. And it's same thing with Good Times, and now the same thing with Timeless.
Well, how did this song come to be?
I actually had met Shelby Lynn at a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame event for Jerry Lee Lewis, and I just took a chance and introduced myself. And we became fast friends. This was maybe 2009 or 10. And at some point I said, hey, Shelby, will you sing on a record for me? And she was like, sure, come over. Meanwhile, she lives in California. I live in New York. So I hopped on a plane and rented a car, and they called her and she said, you know why you're coming here, right? And I was like, yeah, it's to write songs. So we got together and, you know, wrote a couple dozen songs over a couple sessions. She ended up getting a deal and they did some of the songs, but I've just been always in love with that song. And when I got involved with this project, I said to Sam, I said, hey, can I submit a song or two? And he said, absolutely. So I tried to write a couple, you know, quickly, but I knew that song was a winner. So I just added that at the last minute. I just dropped that in the folder. And then all of a sudden I got the message back. Hey, we want to do this. So wow. You can imagine the thrill. And I wrote to Shelby and she was like, oh, you hadn't talked to her in a few years, honestly. Mm-hmm. So it kind of rekindled our friendship too, which was great.
Well, it's so amazing. Who played the horns on that? It's just absolutely amazing. It's so, yeah. Sounds so perfect.
So, and that the original demo is a little bit more R&B, a little bit more down home bluesy kind of feel. And Mickey came back and said, we want to do a bit of a Bacharach style arrangement. So I started messing around with horns. And I have some local friends who play. My friend Michael Lucky came over and played trombone on that. And so that's what you hear. I wrote the arrangement.
Oh, wow.
He knocked it out in like an hour. It was great.
It's absolutely exquisite. And, you know, going off of what Sam said earlier about Mickey's voice, I've often said that not only is Mickey an actor on TV, on film and stage, but, you know, in his performances, we really feel the vibe. He really can inhabit a song. You know what I mean? Like nobody else.
Absolutely can't. Yeah. And we witnessed that, like Sam was saying, in Nashville. When he's on the mic, he's transporting you and he's doing a performance that is obviously goes beyond just singing the tune. He's taking us somewhere.
Can I go back to one thing about Pete that Pete said, you know, on Pete's song, the one thing that, you know, once again, when Mickey, you know, downplays, you know, his production abilities, you know, it was Mickey who led it to the Bacharach direction. Like Mickey was the one who really pushed us there. Like that was initial notes from him is please lean into Bacharach on this. And although when you hear it, you think, oh, that's indigenously what it should have been. It was actually a process to get it there. It was, that's not really where it started. So that was 100% Mickey.
It sounds so natural.
We kind of used the Monkees Don't Call on Me as a bit of an oral inspiration as well.
And John, you were clutch with that. You would just get us back on track. Sometimes we'd be lost and you'd be like, hey guys, listen to this. And all of a sudden everything would come into focus.
Yeah, there's like a lot of ADHD going on here. And I felt that John was able to sort of crack the whip and just bring me back into the planet. So
I think all three of us suffer from it.
There's just stuff. There's stuff. I'm sure there's a doctor who could really help and diagnose all of it.
It was the... I don't want to jinx it. It was the easiest project I've ever worked on.
Well, it is a great project. And I'm telling you, as a fan of Mickey and the Monkees, this is a love letter to us. And awesome. I'm telling you, people are going to dig it so much. Seriously, thank you so much as a
fan.
We're
not done yet.
You're not done yet.
That's
awesome. Yeah, we have the disco record with the auto tune. Don't talk about it.
The remix. Okay.
Ken, walk us into the Johnny Polonsky song, the last song.
And of course, track six, the song that has the longest title on this album, if not in the world. In the Center of My Heart, there's a force commonly known as Love, written by Johnny Polonsky. How did this song come to be on the album?
I was at a Christmas party, no pun intended, and I met Johnny Polonsky. And we were talking, you know, in LA, the first thing people ask you is, what are you working on? You know, that's a icebreaker. And I told him I was working on a new Mickey Dolenz project. He's like, you have to let me submit. And I'm kind of like, you know, humoring this guy, like, okay, sure. I don't know who you are. Fine. Here's my email. Then I get home and I Google him. I'm like, oh, he worked with Rick Rubin. He was on American Recordings. He's written all these great songs. And so he sent a ton of songs. He was so excited. And we had a budget for five songs, and we thought, you know, we got our five songs. I think we're kind of done. But I thought, you know what? Let me just send this little 1.5 minute, almost 2 minute song to everybody and just see what everybody says. And Mickey, what was your reaction when you heard the song?
Wow. I was just like, what? I started trying to sing along with the hook line, which is the title. And I was like, damn, what is he doing there? And it took me a while to learn it. I loved it from the beginning. It reminded me of, and he said when we met him, it was inspired a little bit by the Nez tune,
Papa Jean's Blues.
Papa
Papa
Jean's
Jean's Blues.
Blues.
The demo was a little more Green Day, with Pete and Sam. We really took it into a more country rock Nez area, which was great. And
Absolutely.
we found the budget basically and thought, we can't let this song slip by. And that's a six track EP.
Well, I'm telling you, Mickey, as a fan, when you first hear this song in the end, folks, you're going to hear what sounds like a cocktail party. And I swear to God, I hear John Hughes saying, "Who is Bob Dobelina anyway?"
You heard correctly, and there's more than one Easter egg in there if you
There's a
listen.
lot of Easter eggs in there, but this song, it's so fun. It's excellent. Reminds me of Papa Jean's Blues. I swear to God, that was Louis Shelton or whoever played on that. I forget, but and it also Ricky Nilsson's song, "Fools Rush In," and we got to wrap it up.
That's
We
it. We
do.
got
I
yeah
have to
the
go, guys. Sorry
yep.
about that.
We got what
Great.
we need.
Congratulations, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks, bud.
So, Timeless, available on September 4th.
Everywhere, physical, CD, vinyl, and your favorite streaming service. Or if you still live in 2010, you could even download
Well, there you go.
on iTunes.
I'd like to thank everybody for being here today. Pete, love you. Love what you've done with the figs and your hair today.
Oh.
Just you're a great guy. Sam, it's a pleasure to meet you and thank you for all you've done for us Monkees fans here with this album. John, I love you. You've always had our back here at Zilch. You're the reason we're doing this episode. Plus Mickey's doing an album. But seriously, you've always had our back and you've always had Monkees fans right at the front of your care, right in your heart. And we thank you for that.
To my detriment sometimes.
Right. And last but not least, Mickey Dolenz. Mickey,
Thank you.
I was
Thank
asked to tell you about 6 months ago, if I ever talked to Mickey again, would you tell him how much we all love him? Because there's people like we want to meet Mickey Dolenz or Paul McCartney or Ringo Starr, whoever, and these people, they just would love to, they don't know what they want to say, but they would say, thank you for everything.
Well, thank
So
you, Ken. Thank you for your time today. Hey, thank you, Sam and Pete and John also.
Such an honor. Such an honor.
Love you, my brother.
Thank you,
So,
Zilch Nation. We love you. Appreciate you. Bye.
thanks, Ken.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, there is a next time. Peace and love to everyone and love one another. We were born to love one another, right, Mickey? All right, we'll see you.
Cool. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I remember when the answer seemed so clear.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burt. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.